Support for this program comes from Jazz on the Tube, the Internet's largest collection of free streamable classic jazz videos. From Miles Davis to Louis Armstrong, from Thelonious Monk to Duke Ellington, you'll find it all on jazzonthetube.com. Start your free subscription today.
Hi, and welcome to Jazz Talk, a Jazz on the Tube podcast. My name is Ken McCarthy, and this is where we talk with people who are doing important work that supports and illuminates the music we love. The writers, the scholars, the educators, the filmmakers, the producers, and more.
This is a follow-up to our interview with Dave Oliphant about the Texas roots of Ornette Coleman. And Dave found this great book called Dance of the Peckerwoods, by a musician, writer, man about town, Michael H. Price, and it's an expensive book. It's out of print. I think it first came out in England, and cheapest version on Amazon is $191, and it goes up from there. However, it's been reprinted in an American version. Michael is a Texan. It's just only a British company would publish it. But now it's got an American version brought out by, credit where credit is due, Cremo, these guys are funny, Cremo Studios, and they are located in Lower Kloppstokia, which obviously is a joke, but hey, what the hell. Anyway, this is a great book, and the new title is Thick Lights, Loud Smoke, and Dim, Dim Music, and it's his very interesting take on Texas music culture, which he participated in firsthand to quite a degree. Anyway, there was a time in the early 80s, I remember well, when one of the Bass brothers wanted to develop Fort Worth and created a music venue and invited Ornette to come there to play, and made a big deal was made about it. In fact, there's even a movie called it was made by Shirley Clark. Just look it up. And there's a lot of scenes from that Fort Worth visit. And I think the intention on the part of Bass and some of the city fathers of Fort Worth was to lure Ornette back to Texas, specifically to Fort Worth. And that didn't work out, but that was the goal. Anyway, this Price fella interviewed Ornette in 83, and some interesting stuff came up. So here's the sections on Ornette from the book. I would transcribe it, but I can't spend any more time at a keyboard, so I'm just going to read it out for you. But anyway, this comes from the book Thick Lights, Loud Smoke, and Dim Dim Music by Michael H. Price. If you're interested in Americana music and Americana, this is a really good book, especially if you want to get deeper into the Texas aesthetic. So anyway, first some historical stuff, and I'm going to start reading right now. This is from page 245. A concise survey is in order. Coleman first latched onto a saxophone at age 14 in 1944 in Fort Worth. Self-taught, he performed with an assortment of R&B bands at venues including Fort Worth's historic Bluebird Nightclub. When Big Joe Turner operated out of Fort Worth during 1947 to 48, Coleman landed a job as an accompanist. Quote, I was kind of an anomaly anyhow, and the saxophone just cinched that, end of quote, Coleman said. I was trying to be a vegetarian. Imagine that, 1948, teenage vegetarian in Fort Worth. Ornette was different for sure. I was trying to be a vegetarian back then, too, at a time when no self-respecting Southern Negro would pass up a mess of barbecued ribs or catfish, and I may have been the first kid in town to have my hair marcelled, you know, artificially de-kinked. I guess I was a beatnik. Around 1949, Coleman hit the road for the first time with a traveling unit attached to Silas Green's minstrel show, a Chitlin circuit troupe that belonged more to the waning tradition of black vaudeville than to the defunct form of minstrelsy. That's an important distinction. This is black vaudeville, not a minstrel show, even though it was called a minstrel show. Around that time of his stay in Amarillo, during the same year, Coleman joined Pee Wee Creighton's blues band. Unfortunately, the focus was Texas at the time for Ornette, the whole story of him ending up in New Orleans for a good spell is missing from this narrative, which is unfortunate, but we covered it in the interview. Anyway, he joined Pee Wee Creighton's blues band. Pee Wee was a good boss, Coleman said, but he preferred that I just notate in the background, more honking along than soloing. And the rumor got around that he was paying me not to take any solos. That's pretty much how my reputation got so that it would precede me. Wherever I might try to take myself. I was always a good mimic, and that's an understatement. If he heard it, he could play it. And I could mimic sweet notation as well as imitate Charlie Parker, which went over okay. It'd be when I'd try to sound like myself, not like anybody else, that I'd get into trouble with the conventional band leaders. Interesting, right? But it gets even better. Anyway, somewhere here along, now maybe again, it was maybe a little bit of showbiz and a little bit of politics, but Ornette says this in another chapter. I never really wanted to leave Fort Worth, Coleman told me, but I couldn't play my horn here the way it needed me to be playing it and still find work. That was back in the day when club owners would post signs backstage reading, "Where's the melody?" So I tried to stay in Texas anyhow. Wound up in 1949, he would have been 19, in Amarillo. Ever heard of that town? Northwest of here. At a jazz club and all around wicked place called the La Jolla. Out in the middle of the damnedest, treacherous mudflats you ever did see. I fit in some better there, but it was still no good. All the black cats wanted to keep playing Duke Ellington material as if Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker had never happened. So a little sidebar, this is 49. This was the, you know, the golden age of bebop, and Ornette was in step with that. Coleman continued. Now, this is the interesting part. He's out there in Amarillo, Texas, playing at the La Jolla nightclub. The real inventions came down after hours when these hillbilly cats came down on the honky, The real inventions came down after hours when these hillbilly cats from down on the honky-tonk strip would come down slumming with the spades. That's what Michael Price says, Ornette said. This steel guitar man by the name of Billy Briggs, he'd still sit in with us. He'd sit in with us on this one-of-a-kind instrument he'd built for himself and get downright strange with the takeoff solos. He had himself some chops, I mean. That Briggs cat was doing riffs that you just don't associate with any kind of country music. A Man After My Own Heart. And if not for that old bugaboo segregation, we probably could have hit things off with some kind of band of our own. Fat Chance in Texas. How do you like that? So you got to imagine this. Amarillo, and I got to confess, I don't know where it is, but I think it's out there, jamming with what Ornette describes as hillbilly cats, white hillbilly cats, after hours at the La Jolla Club in 1949. And Ornette being thoroughly impressed with Billy Briggs. I don't know much about Billy Briggs other than this. He made his own instrument. It was an electric guitar of a sort, but it, steel guitar, excuse me. And he made it himself, and he had his own very unique style of playing. Now, to make a living, of course, he had to play what people wanted to hear, and we're going to play his greatest hit. And you get a sense that he was doing something different sonically. Unfortunately, you know, there's no, as far as I know, there's no material of him really laying out and really playing. But you can hear that he had something going on. So I just this image of Ornette Coleman at age 19 in an Amarillo nightclub after hours jamming with hillbillies. If that isn't evidence of the Texas roots of Ornette Coleman, I don't know what is. So here's a tune. This was the greatest hit of Billy Briggs' career as a commercial artist. And gosh, I wish we had some of his more free playing. So music history is a lot richer and deeper and surprising than most of us can imagine, as this episode proves. So with no further ado, Billy Briggs.
I like to smoke my old corn pipe, but I've chewed tobacco nearly all my life. Smoke cigarettes sometimes, but when it comes to dipping, I'll draw the line. Ting, tong, ting, ting, chew the back, chew the back, chew the back. If you chew the back and don't spit on the floor, expect the rain in the custom door. Ting, tong, ting, ting, chew the back, chew the back. Why don't you try to sure want more? Ting, tong, ting, ting, chew the back, chew the back, chew the back, chew the back. Just get a big club and fight off the end. Let it run down and off your chin. Ting, tong, ting, ting, chew the back, chew the back, chew the back. If you chew the back, don't spit on the floor. Back to raid in just the door. Ding, dong, ding, ding, chew the back, chew the back, chew the back, back. You can smoke cigarettes while the sun goes round, but I'll chew the back and spit on the ground. Smoke your pipe, and I'll chew tobacco and spit all night. Ding, dong, ding, ding, chew tobacco, chew tobacco, chew tobacco. If you chew tobacco, don't spit on the floor. Expect a raid in the custom door. Ding, dong, ding, ding, chew tobacco, chew tobacco, chew tobacco.
Thank you. kind of town that we have in these parts. Border Pampaduma Spearman, and we have Perryton too. Wheeler and Shamrock in Wellington, Childress, Memphis, Lakeview, and Clarington, Esteline, Turkey, Tulia, and we all love them true. Now of all the towns that I've left out, we love you too, beyond a doubt. I just didn't have room in this song to add all the towns where they belong. Big Herford Canyon and Silverton, Old Tascosa and Canadian, put them all together and we'll have a panhandle shuffle.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please share it. That's how we grow. And remember to subscribe to jazzonthetube.com, the Internet's largest collection of free, streamable, classic jazz videos.